A little out of our usual schedule, huh?
What day is it today? I don't know. Why is it dark outside?
That one, yes. Generally the season where the days kind of roll into each other.
Oh. We had planned to record earlier, and those plans did not come to fruition.
They did not, no. As my old principal has mentioned, we don't plan to fail, we fail to plan.
But that's the
Except
thing, we
had those plans fail too.
Yeah, we had a plan, we had a schedule, it all went wrong. Anyway, which is what we will be talking about today. Hi, welcome to Indulgently Minimal. I am Moggy, and I am joined today by Jeff.
Heyo, guys.
And Murdoch.
Hello, everyone.
And this week, we're not going to be discussing failure. No, we are going to be rehabilitating failure. He's back. He's better. What can we learn from him? Let's find out.
He's got a brand new suit, and he's ready to fix all. He's fixed all those mistakes, and he's ready to get back out there and start messing stuff up again.
Well, it's a dirty word, isn't it, for many, many people, failure?
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of weight to that word. There's a huge amount of weight to it.
I think a common phrase is like, you can't fail, right? There will be dire consequences, depending on the context. Sometimes, yes.
This cannot fail. This project cannot fail.
Yeah.
All that.
And conversely, you'll often have people telling, trying to give confidence, and they'll say things like, it's fine, you can't fail. As if by removing that possibility, everything else becomes okay. Because failure is, as it were, the worst outcome.
It's going to be fine. You can't fail. Ha ha, you underestimate my powers.
And like so many things, I think a lot of this stuff goes back to childhood. I don't know if you want to cast your mind back to little five-year-old us with our little five-year-old beards.
We need can we insert some harp music?
I think that's the Batman music. Look, meanwhile, at the League of Doom.
Back when he was a mere baby.
He was like, maybe not that far.
Yeah, so my heart plays the Batman theme. It's because I'm cool, you know?
Right. Well, that's fair. And the best kind of Batman, the Adam West
Indeed.
Batman. Before we go too far, of course, when you sort of go back, many of the things come back to our childhoods in the way that we were taught and raised. And I think failure, and specifically the fear of failure, is something that is instilled in many of us during our schooling, where...
Yeah, it's very present.
Yeah, we're taught that failure is the worst thing that can happen. You shouldn't fail. Failure is a weakness. Failure is in itself a failure. Now, why we want to do an episode on this and why we feel this is so important to rehabilitate failure is because failure is how we learn. Failure is how we grow.
It's really important. There is no person on earth that has never failed at something. And if there is somebody that says that, they're either a liar or they've never done anything ever.
Mm. Which is also another... It is a learned response sometimes, you get to the point where it's like, this is a losing game. The only way to win is not to play at all.
Oh, that it good really... old procrastination.
Well, it really does, like, when you have this installation of fear, can you take modern?
It's just when you're there screaming.
Yeah. When you've got this fear of failure instilled in you at such a young age, it can have quite dramatic effects moving on in life because you're less likely to try new things. You're less likely to put yourself in a perhaps socially compromising position, like, putting yourself out there in many ways or feeling, afraid of looking like an idiot or doing something silly because there's all this immediacy of fear of failure because it all goes back to those very early days of our school where we are sat in rows and we are graded like food from good to bad.
Yeah. Mm. This is something that's been recognized. Not too long ago, I did read that supposedly MIT has actually moved away from a graded system into a simple pass-fail, simply because it was so debilitating for many students who had been, very big fish in very small ponds to go into being very average because they were surrounded by other excellent people, that grading them was actually not helping. So now I read they've moved to just a simple pass or fail. Have you done the work? Yes or no? If you haven't, okay, let's help you. Let's fix this.
Let's have a look. Well, it's one of those things where when you're a child, your sense of person and personality is a little murkier. You know, you don't really have a solid foundation of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when so much of your life is revolved around this pass-fail scoring basis, it's very, very easy to attach your identity to being the best or having the highest grades. And because that's not always an option, sometimes you will fail. It can be quite debilitating and crippling to a young person's sense of self if they get into something that's more difficult than they expected and they start failing at it. It can really devastate young people because they just don't, you know, they're not prepared for it.
There's a slight thought tangent I have, I think, sometimes as well. Like, success is, there is a chance that success is rewarded by being put at risk of even bigger failures.
Yeah, like, well done on completing your work. Your reward is more work.
Yeah.
You know, you've done well in school, so your reward is you get to do even more difficult things.
Well, we do sometimes equip children with the tools to deal with these things, but I feel that the path that gives those tools the best is sports, because you're teaching children how to function in a group, how to give away some of that sense of self, some of that sense of ownership to become part of the team. But then to, okay, team, we lost. This is why. So we're going to use that loss as a way for us to get better. We've done this wrong, this wrong, this wrong. You need to work on this, 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 and this. This is how we learn and grow. Jeff, I believe you've had something on this.
Yeah, like it's. I think it's quite a frequently pointed out anecdote that if you're watching a youth sports team play for whatever reason, and you can tell if it's like a mixture of regular kids and kids that play sports like a proper hobby, you know, they're on a sports team, they do lots of sport activities, and you can often tell the children that don't play sports regularly or don't play in a team or don't play competitively, you can often tell from their behavior that they don't when they lose, because for the children that lose without having played competitively, they can't handle the loss because it's genuinely devastating to them because it's a failure that they haven't experienced before or they've not had this acceptance of failure as a possibility instilled into them, whereas the kids that play competitively will just shrug it off because, okay, yeah, you know, we've been here before.
It's a part of competition, and this is how we
competition.
And this is how we learn from failure. And I think this is where coaches are often, again, I think with sports and things around sports, coaches understand that this is going to be necessary because nobody is instantly good and nobody's going to win all of the time. So you better start equipping your team and your individual team members with the tools to not just deal with failure, but also to self-analyze and to learn, okay, so
yeah,
what's my reaction to failure? Some people naturally have that drive of, I don't like this. I don't want this to happen again. I am going to do everything I can to prevent it. And you have other people that it kind of crushes and they need to be built back up again. It's like, no, this isn't the worst thing. Here's what we're going to do. So,
well, it's about being able to learn what your personal thresholds are for failure. Whereas, as you say, some people, it's the failure is a spurring thing. It puts them onto
a lights a fire under them.
Do better. Yeah. They got some chutzpah or whatever. And whereas some people need that need that confidence.
They need nurturing.
They need nurturing, and you can nurture that threshold up.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's different, and people need to be treated in different ways.
Yeah,
Murdoch. Before we move on from the sports thing, it's in the phrase, you know, good sportsmanship. It's basically the ability to handle wins well and the ability to handle losses well.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk about good winners and good losers, people who've learned how to, you know, win gracefully, lose gracefully. But it's so much of it is about from within as well as how we express it.
Well, it's like, you know, when, as you were talking before about when, you know, when you failed, it's a very important moment to sit there and think, well, okay, if this failure is like hurting you, if it's causing quite negative emotions for you, it's a really good time to go, well, why? Losing and failing is bad. Just objectively, it's not the best thing ever. Mm-hmm. But your reaction to it tells you a lot about yourself. And it's a good time to sort of sit there and go, well, okay, why? Why do I feel this much about this particular thing? Because oftentimes it may be more than you lost a game of football. You know, you lost Kirby with your mates. It's probably maybe something more going on there as to why you're so angry that you lost.
That is a very interesting point to bring up, because I think one of the ways that we can train this is actually video games. Not just competitive video games as well, because I know when you get into any sort of level of competitive video gaming, there are, I don't know, like teaching methods, mantras, as it were, like, you know, you need to learn to enjoy losing because you're gonna a lot.
Mm.
And this is how we learn. You know, you don't learn from winning. So if you're just button mashing your way to a victory, you've not learnt anything. You need somebody to beat your whoop your Kirby down or whatever the kids call it these days. But at the same time, you also have certain video games, and I think it's a semi-modern thing. Modern to us, we're old. But back...
Well, speak for yourself. I'm only 3 years younger than you. Wait, no, I'm 3 years younger than you. That's so much time.
Well, you go back to the arcade days of video games, and failure was punished financially. You have to insert another quarter. You have to insert another 50 pence piece to play again. And this translated into the early console days into some quite punishing forms of gaming. And, you know, it's the old Super Mario, lose your three lives and you have to go right back to the beginning. Yeah. It was something that kind of came about in the last, I would say, 10, 15 years. And the best example that comes to my mind would be Super Meat Boy, which had this excellent gameplay loop of being both brutally difficult, but respawning you instantly.
Yeah.
Try again.
No low time.
Try again. Try again.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you got this beautiful payoff where you got to see every single mistake played out in front of you simultaneously
in this meat tsunami.
that's if it doesn't bring your computer crashing down.
Yeah. And you could just watch the one single meat boy sort of break through the pack to victory. It was quite cathartic.
He did it. He's the one. He's the chosen one.
It feels great.
Come on, little buddy. You can do it. I believe in you.
You know, it's the old Dark Souls mantra, get good. Literally, they're saying, learn. You're going to die. You're going to fail over and over again. Learn to deal with it. You need to go through this to get good.
Dark Souls is a particular flavor of, like, you will fail. You know, the number of times you've seen the you died.
Prepare to die edition, yeah.
At the beginning, it is very devastating. It's not for the faint of heart, for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's a grueling experience at the very beginning. But you learn to deal with that scene very quickly.
Well, it's a really nice gameplay loop in the Soulsborne games where you oftentimes have to die. Not because of the game scripts it, but sometimes you... Not just because, like, that's part of the game script, but sometimes you need to die and fail because that's kind of like how you understand the mechanic you're encountering at that time. Some people will just, you know, waddle on, they won't be fine. But for a lot of us, mostly me, I need to lose like a lot again and again. Like Marta Ligarius and Bloodborne. Oh my God, I was on that thing for weeks. I'm having flash. Oh, the scythe wielding stupid.
But it trains you.
Man.
It trains you, because I remember getting Dark Souls 3 after having fallen in love with Bloodborne and played it to death. So that when I picked up Dark Souls 3 and, you know, there's all the internet stuff going, oh, it's so hard, hardest game ever. And I go through the first boss that supposedly 60% of players haven't even beaten or whatever. And I go through it without even dying and you go, what's, this isn't that hard. Forgetting that I'd literally had hundreds of hours of training on how to fight this exact type of enemy.
Me.
Yeah.
Grundy boy. What was that his name? Gruntilda. Yeah.
Gruntildy
boy.
But this is it.
Gruntildy boy.
You're using past failures to learn and grow.
Yeah, it's like it really, really helps, because like when you keep failing, and then especially Dark Souls is again another really good example where you just want to pick back up and try again and try again and try again. When you lose like that, you really sort of learn what's driving you, why you keep going back, why, you know, is it because you enjoy the fight? Is it because you want to beat it? Is it because you want to conquer the game? You really kind of understand why you're putting yourself through this, why you're going in knowing you're probably going to lose again and again and again. It definitely tells you something about yourself.
I mean, it's such a cliche, but truly you have to kind of beat yourself as well. You have to, face your own fears, face your own demons to grow past it. I mean, it sounds over the top because we are just talking about a video game here, but there is an element of it giving you these tools, teaching you how to learn from failure. Like, why did we die? What happened? What did you miss? What were you doing? What weren't you doing? And
I was teabagging and I fell off the ledge.
Oh, Jeff, no.
I played as a mound boy in Dark Souls 3. It's what you do.
But the only reason you're able to sort of achieve these things, climb to the top of the castle, finish the final boss, gain that crowning glory, is not actually as much about failure as your response to it, how you use it, and therefore the effort you apply towards it?
Yeah, like it's, for some people, like they really, really thrive on that effort. Like that's why they'll keep going back to it, because putting in the work, putting in the effort again and again and again, it speaks to them. They really enjoy themselves doing that. You can kind of get into a flow state. And then for some people, a lot of that repeated effort can lead to a burnout. It can burn you out quite quickly if that's not what your brain is after, if it's not what your brain's going for.
It's the Steam statistics of how many players have not beaten the first boss in Dark Souls, for example. For some people, they kind of play it a few times and go, yeah, this ain't for me.
Yeah.
This isn't worth the effort. And we all go through that.
Yeah, and that's an important lesson to learn from that failure. It's that, okay, this is not for me. Rather than spending ages bashing your head against a genre or a sport or an activity that you actually don't like.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before.
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay to walk away. And I think that's part of the quote-unquote rehabilitation here is that I don't want to say giving up because that has a certain connotation, but making an active choice of I'm not enjoying this, I am not getting out of this activity what I wanted to, I'm going to stop and do something else. That's okay, and that's part of rehabilitating failure. You haven't failed. You've learned something.
Yeah. As you said up top, we learn so much from failing.
I have a small thought train going on here.
Choo-choo.
Choo-choo.
All aboard the headache with images.
all aboard the pain train. I think primarily with video games, this is an environment in which, like, failure doesn't have any real consequences, right?
It's a safe place, I think.
It's a safe place. The guardrails are up.
You tell that to my controllers.
Everything in context. It's a safe place for you. The controllers were not informed. But video games, yes, they give you basically a safe play area, so to speak. Like, you can fail as much as you want within this area.
Yeah.
I think translating to the real world, the problem is maybe our inability to assess when the guardrails are up and when the guardrails are down. Some failures do have consequences. Some pretty bad consequences.
That's a very fair point.
Some pretty severe consequences for certain things, yeah.
But I think the other issue is that sometimes we lose our ability to assess how bad the consequences are.
What could go wrong?
There's an overconfidence that can build up if you've succeeded many, many times without real failure.
Yeah,
that can lead to some devastating consequences because you will attempt something that is quite clearly you're not supposed to do that. You know, you're not supposed to use that bike in this area, says Professor Oak.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's that, and then there's the flip side, which is basically, you know, your impression that this failure feels like the end of the world when really it's not that bad.
Yeah. It's two sides of the same coin, isn't it? Where sometimes it's not so bad and other times it is bad. So, you know, if you fail that final test at university, that's bad. But, you know, how did you get yourself into that situation? You know, it should never get to the point where it's make or break like that. And I think it's sometimes recognizing the little failures that may be building up along the way that are leading to something more catastrophic. mm-hmm. and learning when you're doing, because I think this is when there's, when we talk about using failure and learning from failure, it's as much about, so failure is how we learn that, oh, well, the square peg didn't go into the circle hole. Maybe we should try the square peg in the star hole. No. That's learning from failure. This is literally what the infant is doing with that puzzle. This doesn't work. Mm. This doesn't work. Oh, this works. That's how it works. They grow from that. I know it's a really simple image, but it works.
There's always that one kid that just puts
everything through the circle hole. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, now you're doing it wrong, Timmy.
At the same time, there is also the negative side of this, or learning to spot the negative side effects of this. So if you have some maladaptive behaviors, shall we say, procrastination is a good example of one. Why did you fail the test? Oh, I didn't study enough. Why didn't you study? Well, every time I sat down to study, I ended up playing Dark Souls and Bloodborne. It's
or that other one. It's basically, why didn't you study? Well, because I couldn't study perfectly. It's like, what's the reference point for perfectly? You know, you need to collect some information.
That's a good, you know, sometimes we fear failure so much that we strive for utter perfection. And if we can't achieve it, it's not worth doing.
Yeah. Mm. It's like the old saying, don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Don't let perfect be the enemy of something completed.
Yeah.
Finish it and submit it.
It can go into the attic with all my other unfinished projects, and I shall feed them fish heads.
Father, Father, you have returned.
I've personally had to deal with this like exact thought where, yes, you know, good enough is good enough. Like, I've struggled with it over the years, but honestly speaking, I think it's very understated. It does not have to be perfect. It just has to be done.
What's like the unofficial motto of DIY is, you know, heck it, that'll do.
Is that how that one goes?
I think the original one's a little spicier, but we're a family-friendly podcast here.
And it's worth pointing out, this isn't a, we're not handing an excuse for laziness or half-arsing it, as it were, but rather make sure that when you're taking your notes, it's fine to, you know, take your notes and have your highlighters and underline things and yada, yada, yada. But if you're at the point where you're missing lectures because your handwriting has to be perfect and, oh, I tried to underline something and it went wonky, so I have to rewrite the page. I mean, these are extreme examples, but it's a concrete example of how perfect becomes the enemy of, well, anything.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh, how does it go that you don't want to start writing in that beautiful diary because it needs to be perfect? No, get your thoughts down. You need to write this down. Write that down.
Yes, I must savor this, for this shall be a document of all my amazing ideas that I'll put in the museum.
Nah.
It was just a random thought at 3 a.m. in the morning. That was kind of interesting. That's it. Write it down.
Jeff, you need to learn to accept this. Just as it is, be stoic about it.
Ah.
Because you know stoicism, right?
Isn't that that thing where basically you as a member of society, as more stereotypically a man, need to push down all your feelings and be as strong as a rock in moving forward?
Stiff upper lip, yes.
It is a common misunderstanding, because like the word stoic means like this. It's come to mean this dour, stony face, you know, we just got to do what we've got to do. Mm. When, like, really with stoicism, it's not about suppressing your feelings at all. It's very important to understand and feel the feelings, which is a terrible phrase, but
acknowledge
truly feel
them.
The feelings, acknowledge them, understand that they are valid. Mm. But the important thing is to feel the feelings and then understand why they're happening. And then when you act, you do so from a rational place rather than an emotional one, because you don't have control over your emotions. You shouldn't seek to have control over your emotions like that. Mm-hmm. They're going to happen, like weather, they're going to happen to you.
Yeah.
But the important part of stoicism is to accept that, understand it, but then try to move forward after having had those feelings and then decide what to do in a rational manner, not based upon those emotions.
I want to pick up on that point as you said it, because it's a very valid point, and we may have said this before, but it does bear repeating, that we often blame ourselves for having feelings, especially negative feelings, and we feel like, oh, I shouldn't have felt that way. I shouldn't have done that. I should have had some control over that. But no, feelings aren't thoughts. If it was, you feel your feelings, they happen to you. If it was something you could control, it would be a thought.
Yeah, you don't think a fear. No. You feel fear or happiness or...
We can't...
Those are the only two emotions that exist.
You can't control whether you have feelings or not. The only thing you can control is your reaction to them. And it's a very, very valid point. And it's something that, I don't know, I have to keep relearning over and over again.
Hmm. Well, like, it's one of those things, like with certain schools of, Zen and Buddhism and whatnot, that whole beginner's mind concept, you do constantly have to go back and start again and rethink it and start, you know, and just sort of readdress this. I know I addressed this to myself 3 weeks ago, but I need to go back over it because you need to refamiliarize yourself with it. You need to understand it again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. There was a phrase I wanted to touch upon that basically scheduling your grief.
Oh, that's an interesting...
It's not a pleasant phrase.
But it's definitely adjacent to the Stoic. Like, it's, okay, I know that this is bad. I know I need to deal with this, but I can't do this emotion right now. Hmm. You know, I'm teaching a class, I'm flying a plane. But you can kind of compartmentalize that for a small amount of... You can compartmentalize that for a small amount of time. And then when you are in a safer space, you can then allow that out of the box to fully feel and...
Go through it.
Go through the emotion that you couldn't necessarily deal with at that particular time.
Well, grief is a really good sort of vehicle to discuss this because it is something so visceral that we all go through, but we also don't always realize we're going through. We obviously understand that when we lose a loved one, we're going to grieve, but we don't necessarily realize that we grieve many things in our lives. You know, we grieve that lost opportunities. We grieve lost iPods, lost to the washing machine. We grieve
time.
Yes. But as you said, it's something you have to allow yourself to go through. And at points, it's something that is almost all-consuming. There are moments when it just takes over your whole being. And this is something that mindfulness teaches, the actual concept of mindfulness. This is the muscle that you are exercising in that training. You're training yourself for the not now. Mindfulness is really simple. You're going to sit and you're going to just focus on your breathing and let yourself be still. And if you have a thought, if you have a feeling, you let it come and then you let it go. And the mantra is not now. I will deal with this. Like, if it's important, I'll deal with it later. Perhaps it's not important at all. And it's a muscle you're building up, the ability to say, okay, that's an interesting thought. I'm just going to put it over here and deal with that later. Right now, we're doing our sitting thing.
Mm. Yeah. It really feeds into, like, when we're talking about like failure and using like mindfulness and stoicism as like a platform. There's a very important part in stoicism where it teaches or tells, explains, asks, when you're doing something, when you're preparing for anything, it's a vital importance that you accept that failure is a possibility.
Hmm.
Like not accepting it that it's going to happen, not expecting it to happen, but then no matter what you do, there is a possibility that even if you put in 100% and everything goes right, you might still fail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to prepare for that and accept that will happen. Otherwise, the failure will cripple you. You have to be able to acknowledge that it is a possibility and you can prepare yourself beforehand just in case it happens.
And prepare in general, like if X and Y happen, I have a plan for that.
Yeah.
It's not just like, oh, I will stoically go down as the ship's sinking. No, I have a life raft. It shouldn't get to the point where a single moment of failure will destroy everything. There should be always contingencies and yada, yada, yada. And part of being able to do that is accepting something might go wrong. Mm-hmm. I may fail at X, Y, or Z, but that's okay. We're all going to be okay. We're going to do X if Y happens, and we're going to do A if Z happens.
I guess it's part of the practice of emotional regulation. Some people are very good at this, and some people are, speaking for myself, very bad at this, right? But it is a muscle you can train, and I think this ability to assess how bad a failure can be is an important exercise.
Yeah.
As we were mentioning, some things can be really not that bad, and some things can be outright devastating. But if you are unable to assess what the extent of the consequences are, it may either lead you down a path of failure or just keep you crippled, not able to do anything. And this, I think, is the point we're trying to address.
Well, how is it we say the worst thing you can do is nothing at all?
Yeah. Not doing anything is... It's already a failure in a sense, but it's a failure without effort, which is just kind of like the saddest.
Pointless. It's...
Yeah, it's a pointless failure.
Yeah.
You learn nothing.
And nothing good will come of it.
Yeah.
You need to try.
And if it doesn't work, don't beat yourself up too much about it. I mean, it's good to, you know, address yourself and, you know, address yourself. Ah, but Jeff Lyer. But
what is it you say every week, Jeff?
I say a lot of things every week. But,
go easy on yourself.
Go easy on yourselves. Mm-hmm. It's really, really, it's easy to forget. It's so easy to forget. It's why I keep saying it.
Be kind to yourself. Sometimes you're the only one that's gonna.
Yeah, the way we talk to ourselves, you would never dream of talking to somebody else like that. And you wouldn't take it from somebody else. So you don't deserve it. You don't deserve to have it. And you have no right to give it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be nice.
Be nice to yourself so that you can pick yourself up and try again.
And this is why I think we focused on video games so much at the beginning, because that can be a safe place to train that muscle. If you find that failing at Dark Souls, Hollow Knight, Meat Boy, these are all games that have kicked my butt. If you find that that is causing you a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, a lot of negative, I'm not just talking like, oh, darn it. I mean, like, emotionally, you are struggling with this failure, that can be a safe place to explore that.
Reiterating again, yes, learn how you respond and, you know, align accordingly.
Go from there, because if this is how you react when your little meat boy jumps into the gear grinding thing for the 100th time, what's going to happen when you are playing for keeps?
Yeah.
You know, now's the time to learn about yourself and learn how to deal with that. Learn that little bit of stoicism. Learn that. Okay, not now. We all lose our temper sometimes, but we can't do that right now. So let us be good sports about all this. You know, it is a valuable tool, and it's one that we don't always recognize is available to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ultimately, where we want ourselves to be and where we want our listeners to be is to be able to look at something and go, you know what, I'm going to try that, because if it doesn't go well, I'm going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's limits. I mean, don't go jumping Springfield Gorge or anything.
I'm doing it. Oh, no. I'm doing it. Woo! Well, there's somebody who didn't plan for failure. Bring a parachute. You can try the daredevil jump, but have a couple safety nets in there as well. Like, that's a good example of what we've been talking about. Okay. So I hope you guys have enjoyed that one. I hope you've learned something. We're going to be back next week with one of our patented blobcasts, so stay tuned for that. We have been Indulgently Minimal. Please follow us on Instagram, follow us on Mastodon. All of the links to the socials are in the show notes. We let you know when new episodes are coming. We let you know when other things are coming up. So those are the best places to find out more. Or you can email us. Go old school. We are indulgentlyminimal@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. Any thoughts, questions, comments, ideas for upcoming episodes, concepts you want us to cover, shoot us an email. We're on Ko-fi, and as we say every time, thank you so much to everybody that's supporting us over there. It really helps us pay our bills, keeps the lights on, and helps us keep making the show. The link is in the show notes. It's ko-fi.com/indulgentlyminimal. I've been Moggy, and I've been joined today by Jeff.
Thanks, guys. Do remember to go easy on yourselves.
And Murdoch.
And remember, folks, indulge a little.
Thanks for joining us. See you for the next one. Bye.
See you later, guys.
Take care, everyone.